The Chatterbox Players present A Chatterbox Christmas Carol with Maureen Marr as narrator and Neville Miller as Ebenezer Scrooge.
Once upon a time, upon a Christmas Eve, old Scrooge sat busy in his counting house.
A Merry Christmas, Uncle!
It was the voice of Scrooge's nephew, Bob Cratchit.
Bah! Humbug!
Christmas? A humbug, Uncle? You don't mean that, I'm sure.
I do. Out upon Merry Christmas! If I had my will, every idiot who goes about with Merry Christmas on his lips should be boiled with his own pudding. He should.
Uncle!
Nephew, keep Christmas in your own way, and let me keep it in mine.
Keep it? But you don't keep it.
Let me leave it alone, then. Much good may it do you. Much good it has ever done you.
I've always thought of Christmas time as a good time, a kind, forgiving, charitable, pleasant time. And therefore, Uncle, though it's never put a scrap of gold or silver in my pocket, I believe that it's done me good and will do me good. And I say, God bless it.
Good afternoon.
I'll keep my Christmas humour to the last. So a Merry Christmas, Uncle.
Good afternoon.
And a Happy New Year.
Good afternoon.
Bob left the room without an angry word, but the clerk, in letting Scrooge's nephew out, had let in a charity collector.
At this festive season of the year, Mr. Scrooge, we should make some slight provision for those without sight of this parish who suffer greatly at the present time. A few of us are endeavouring to raise a fund to start up a talking news provision called Chatterbox for visually impaired people. What shall I put you down for?
Nothing.
You wish to be anonymous?
I wish to be left alone. Since you ask me what I wish, gentlemen, this is my answer. I don't make merry myself at Christmas, and I can't afford to make idle people merry. I help to support the changes to road layouts and inappropriate pedestrian crossings in this town to confuse all who use the streets. They cost enough. And those who are without information to navigate successfully must get lost.
Many can't use the street information signs, and many would rather die than try to cross the gyratory system around St. Augustine's.
If they would rather die, they had better do it.
The hour for shutting up the counting house arrived. Scrooge took his melancholy dinner in his usual melancholy tavern, the Magpie, and went home to bed. Now it is a fact that there was nothing at all particular about the knocker on the door of this house, except that it was very large. And yet Scrooge, having his key in the lock of the door, saw in the knocker not a knocker, but Marley's face. Marley's face, grotesque, with a dismal light about it like Donald Trump smiling. As Scrooge looked at this, it was a knocker again. He said,
"Pooh! Pooh!"
and closed the door. The sound resounded through the house like thunder. Every room above and every cask in the wine merchant cellars below appeared to have a separate peal of echoes of its own. Scrooge was not a man to be frightened by echoes. He fastened the door and walked across the hall and up the stairs. Up Scrooge went, not caring a button for its being very dark. Darkness is cheap, and Scrooge liked it. Quite satisfied, he closed his door and locked himself in. Double locked himself in, which was not his custom. Thus secured against surprise, he put on his dressing gown and slippers and his nightcap and sat down before the very low fire to take his gruel. As he threw his head back in the chair, His glance happened upon a bell, a disused bell that hung in the room. It was with great astonishment and with a strange dread that as he looked, he saw this bell begin to swing. Soon it rang out loudly, and so did every bell in the house. This was succeeded by a clanking noise deep down below, as if some person were dragging a heavy chain over the casks in the wine merchant's cellar. Then he heard the noise much louder, on the floors below, then coming up the stairs, then coming straight towards his door. It came on through the heavy door, and a spectre passed into the room before his eyes. And upon its coming in, the dying flame leaped up as though it cried,
I know him. Marley's ghost.
What do you want with me?
Much.
Who are you?
Ask me who I was.
Who were you then?
In life I was your partner, Jacob Marley.
The ghost sat down on the opposite side of the fireplace, as if he was quite used to it.
You don't believe in me.
I don't.
Why do you doubt your senses?
Because a little thing affects them. You may be an undigested bit of beef, a blot of Coleman's mustard, a crumb of Mrs. Temple's cheese, a fragment of an underdone potato. There's more of gravy than of grave about you, whatever you are.
The spirit raised a frightful cry.
Mercy, dreadful apparition! Why do you trouble me? Why do spirits walk the earth, and why do they come to me?
It is required of every man that the spirit within him should walk among his fellow men and travel far and wide, almost to Spixworth. And if that spirit goes not forth in life, it is condemned to do so after death. I cannot rest. I cannot stay. I cannot linger anywhere. My spirit never walked beyond our counting house. Mark me. In life, my spirit never roved beyond our money-changing hole. And weary journeys lie before me.
Scrooge was very much dismayed to hear the spectre going on at this rate, and began to quake exceedingly.
I am here tonight to warn you that you have yet a chance and hope of escaping my fate. You will be haunted by three spirits, Bells, Gordons, and Jack Daniels. Expect the first tomorrow night when the bell tolls one. Expect the second on the next night at the same hour. The third upon the next night when the last stroke of 12 has ceased to vibrate. Look to see me no more.
Scrooge tried to say humbug, but stopped at the first syllable, and being tired from the emotion he'd undergone, or the fatigues of the day, or his glimpse of the invisible world, or the conversation of the ghost, or the lateness of the hour, he went straight to bed without undressing, and fell asleep on the instant.